Salo Falava. I'm Afamasanga Seyuli Salamasina Von Reiki, and I'm inviting you to join me on a journey through the evolution of our Pacific cultures on Culture Compass. We'll meet incredible people dedicated to preserving traditions while adapting them for today's world. Join me as we travel the Pacific to celebrate our resilience, revival, and deep-rooted connection.
Search for Culture Compass wherever you get your podcasts to listen.
This is an ABC podcast.
Taloha ni, bon dia, ni sambuli vinaka, and good blue morning. This is Pacific Beat on ABC Radio Australia. I'm your host, Aggie Thupol, and our show comes to you from the lands of the Boonwurrung and Wurundjeri peoples of the Kulin Nation. On the show today, Fiji's prominent online writer Charlie Charters may be released on bail, but says his treatment by the country's anti-corruption agency has done nothing to reduce the problem of corruption. In Australia, farmers built a chapel for their seasonal Tongan workers, described as the backbone of their banana operation. I'll bring you the beautiful sounds of Tongan seasonal worshipping in their new chapel, all that here on Pacific Beat, yours in the Pacific. But first, five Indonesian fishing vessels have been caught allegedly fishing illegally in Papua New Guinea waters, with about 80 crew apprehended and will be processed through the courts. Three of those ships have been sunk by authorities after PNG court fined the Indonesian crew $150,000. Authorities say another two vessels will be destroyed following a court hearing. PNG's Fisheries Minister, Jelta Wong, told the ABC's Marion Farr the vessels were apprehended in the country's western region.
They were all located in the Dogleg area, western province, and they came as far as Kikori. It was good teamwork. You know, we intercepted and they tried to hide between islands. Even one tried to make a dash for the Torres Strait, but we got him in time and we brought him back in.
We also heard reports of a group of Indonesian fishing vessels that was spotted by a helicopter in the Torres Strait about 2 weeks ago. Is this the same boats that we're talking about?
No, that's a different boat. I think there's about 11 or 12 of them running around, and since we've taken five of them, or six of them, we're still hunting the other six, but I think they've made a mad dash back to the Indonesian side. But We've got a bilateral with Indonesia, which allows us to identify and secure those boats when they're in Indonesian waters. So we'll be talking with our Indonesian counterparts to ensure that we get them. And these boats are horrendous. They use these nets called drag nets, which drag the bottom of the ocean. And it doesn't matter what they're picking up. They're smashing coral and all this. So they're very dangerous for the ecosystem as well.
What are they fishing for primarily?
Primarily, they're looking at fish maw, squid. Those two vessels that came in the other day were squid, and we just had some inspections on the vessel, and we found some contraband. Slowly, we're investigating.
What sort of contraband was located on the vessels?
Because it's still in court, I really can't say.
These boats and their crew have been brought into the Port Moresby Harbour. I mean, what happens now? Has anyone been charged?
Yeah, Indonesian consulate has been informed. They will all be formally charged and then all be sent to Bumrungrung.
What sort of charges might they face?
Illegal entry of a sovereign nation and also stealing and all that. We're throwing the book at them. We're looking at everything.
Is this an issue that's becoming worse, in your opinion, or from the kind of intel that you're getting?
No, the problem was already there. We never put a surveillance operation in place. And since we've got these two patrol boats, you can see the difference now. We're catching these vessels and we're making sure that we punish them.
Can you tell us about why these sort of illegal fishing boats or allegedly illegal fishing boats are such a concern for Papua New Guinea?
They're such a concern because they come and they damage our marine life, our coral reefs. They're illegally taking natural resource out of Papua New Guinea for their own benefit, and they don't have. They don't follow the rules. You know, fish maw is like the belly of the fish, and then they chuck the carcasses back into the ocean, which is quite a lot if you come to think of it.
You mentioned that the Indonesian governments that have been notified. Should Indonesia be doing more to stop the boats coming and fishing illegally in PNG waters?
And I would hope so, but, you know, we deal with them and they handle their own things in their country and we handle the way we do it in our country.
Was the Australian police or border force or any Australian officials involved in this operation at all?
No.
Is it promising to see that these vessels are being apprehended?
Personally, I think it's promising. There's six vessels out of circulation, altogether close to 80 illegal fishermen out of circulation. I think they will learn. It's quite a lucrative business, and the cost of these products are quite high. So it's a dent, but we will pursue more to ensure that the borders are protected. If you come to our country, you know, there's proper processes and ways to do fishing in our country. If you follow that, it should be easy. But if you come illegally, we will find those vessels and we will sink those vessels.
And there is Papua New Guinea's Fisheries Minister, Jelta Wong. Well, police in the Solomon Islands have denied rumours that they've given permission for Chinese police to open their own station in Chinatown in the capital, Honiara. Speculation has been swirling after a shipping container, which will be used for a new police post, appeared on the grounds of the Chung Hwa School. But both the Royal Solomon Islands Police Force and the Solomon Islands Chinese Association, which owns the school grounds, insists the new post will be for local police and not for Chinese officers. Well, we have a foreign affairs reporter, Stephen Jedgetts, joining us this morning. Stephen, a bit of a complicated story, so let's sort of step through it. First, can you take us through some of the recent history in Chinatown in Honiara and like why business owners there might have legitimate concerns about law and order?
Yeah, well, of course, it was only a few years ago in November 2021 when riots shook Honiara. There have, of course, been periodic riots in the capital of Solomon Islands. And what unfortunately tends to happen when unrest breaks out in Solomon Islands is that Chinatown is often a target. And that is, of course, what happened in November 2021 when a protest devolved into a riot and we saw many buildings in Chinatown burnt to the ground with many Chinese business owners, both long-term Chinese business owners and also more recent arrivals, largely from Fujian province, losing their entire livelihoods. So there has been a history which understandably makes locals in Chinatown very watchful and worried about law and order. It's a very understandable response. Some of those anxieties also became a little bit more acute when not that long ago, about a year and a half ago, the RSIPF shut down an existing police post outside a community health clinic in Chinatown. You couple that with the fact that there has been throughout Honiara in recent years a bit of an uptick in crime and in some instances more serious crime. There has been a feeling in amongst some people in Chinatown that they need a bit more protection.
Well, with that, though, Stephen, I'm sure everyone is the question on their minds is where did these rumours, though, about a Chinese police office first come from?
Well, they cropped up, at least as far as we can tell, when a bit of a demountable building, a small repurposed shipping container, popped up on the grounds of the Chung Hwa School. Now, the Chung Hwa School in Chinatown is a well-regarded local school that large numbers of children go to. But it was very confusing, at least to some parents, when this building cropped up on the edge of the school grounds, not far from the playground. Rumours then started to swirl very quickly that this was going to be a police post. Not only that, the rumour that started to swirl around is that this would be a Chinese police liaison team outpost that would be set up in conjunction with the school. Now, understandably, that set potentially in some quarters the hair's running, because a Chinese police station or a Chinese manned police station would have serious repercussions politically within Solomon Islands. Also, it would be potentially very explosive from a geopolitical standpoint as well. As you know, Aggie, we've seen basically an arm wrestle between Australia and China in the security space ever since China and Solomon Islands signed sweeping security and policing agreements in 2022 in the wake of those riots. Australia and others have been doing everything possible to box China in, to stop it embedding itself as a major security player. China, unsurprisingly, in some instances pushes back against this, saying that it's unreasonable to be suspicious about its intentions, and it wants to do nothing more than bolster the capability of the Royal Solomon Islands Police Force. But the prospect of any sort of Chinese police presence, a permanent one, in the capital, and perhaps particularly near Chinatown, was potentially a very politically explosive one.
Yeah, and Stephen, if I think, is there any substance to this though? Right, like what have we heard from the Royal Solomon Islands Police Force, and even maybe from the Chinese Association about this?
So when these rumours started to swirl around, unsurprisingly, we hit the phones trying to work out what was or wasn't going on. Both the Royal Solomon Islands Police Force and the Solomon Islands Chinese Association, which owns and runs the school and which has provided this building, have denied outright that this new police facility will be run by Chinese police. The RSIPF has confirmed that there will be a new police post in the school, but they say that this is for Solomon Islands police, not for Chinese police, and that those RSIPF officers will essentially use that outpost to manage the increased criminal activities in Chinatown, and as well as in the surrounding communities in Honiara. We heard from a spokesperson from the RSIPF saying that they'll do things like daily footbeat patrols, community engagements, as well as dealing with offenders, not just in Chinatown, but in the broader area as well. We also spoke to Henry Kwan from the Solomon Islands China Association. He said, yes, his organisation did set aside this new demandable for police, but he says this is not for Chinese police. Again, he says this is for the Royal Solomon Islands Police Force. He says that they had to resort to using the school because they couldn't find any other land for a police station in Chinatown. He says they spent 6 months or so looking for this and had no luck. So he says that this is all about trying to ensure there is a permanent police presence in the community. He's basically said to us that large numbers of people in the community want more of a police presence. Again, as we went through, the history here makes this a very understandable reflex, given it was only 5 or so years ago that those terrible riots really struck Chinatown. And he says that was the entire motivation here, just trying to bring police, not Chinese police, he says, but RSIPF into the community to give the community some reassurance.
Yeah, I mean, do you think other countries like Australia will be keeping a close eye on this? Because I understand this is it's such a sensitive subject, right?
It is, yeah, it is sensitive because of the geopolitics around it in particular. And I think it's likely that Australia and other countries will keep a pretty close eye on this one. It is worth noting that the RSIPF spokesperson we had a discussion with, when we asked, you know, whether there'd be any role for the Chinese police liaison teams, he said no, they will just visit the office. So that seems to be ruling out them running it, but it does nonetheless leave the door, or seem to leave the door ajar for some sort of Chinese police presence. Australia, fairly or not, is likely to be pretty suspicious. I think they're going to watch this very closely indeed. It is worth noting that leaked copy of the 2022 security agreement does lay out a pathway for China to send armed police and military personnel to Solomon Islands at the request of Honiara, of course, to protect the safety of Chinese nationals. And so the location of this this office is also pretty germane to that. And of course, more broadly, Australia remains pretty suspicious of any sort of Chinese police presence in the Pacific. Australia's argued before that China has used overseas police stations, for example, or informal overseas police stations to try and monitor and intimidate diaspora groups, and to use its presence in police forces as a vector for influence. So I think Australia is not going to panic, but it will probably keep a pretty close eye on this new temporary police post. Interestingly, we spoke yesterday to Lachlan Strawn, a former Australian High Commissioner, about this. He was actually the High Commissioner who was in Solomon Islands at the time of the riots and the enormous controversy over the subsequent security agreements. His argument was that this is that this is a long way short of what Australia has feared about a persistent military presence from China in Solomon Islands. Nonetheless, he made the argument that China might see benefits in establishing a bit of an outpost in Chinatown, either formally or informally. One, as he points out, there is a good consular reason for the Chinese to keep a close eye on what happens in Chinatown. There are an awful lot of Chinese nationals there, and as we know, it can be combustible in Honiara. But he also pointed out that this might be a bit of a, if China were to take this step, it would offer a strategic benefit to China, a propaganda victory, for lack of a better phrase, because they are trying to broadcast to the broader Pacific that they have a legitimate role providing security to Chinese nationals, as well as providing security more broadly. And that, of course, is a message that Australia doesn't want China to be able to broadcast. It wants to send the message that security in the Pacific should be left to Pacific nations and to traditional partners like Australia and New Zealand. So, look, in brief, Aggie, at the moment, we simply don't know what this is going to look like. We've got on-the-record comments from the Chinese Association and the RSIPF saying this is not a Chinese police base. But I think Australia and others are going to keep a pretty close eye on how this develops over the coming months.
That's right. Yeah, well, as you said, Stephen, as Australia keeps a close eye on this, I know we will too. But we appreciate you coming on the show this morning, Stephen.
No problem. Thank you.
Always. That is our foreign affairs reporter, Stephen Jedgetts, here on Pacific Beat.
What goes on behind the scenes in Pacific politics and how does it affect us? Each week, Politok dives straight into the tough questions, like who is actually stepping in to save people from sorcery, accusation, violence in Papua New Guinea?
So she was gasping for air inside the people in a group there, and then they accused her, like, you must be the sorceress.
On Politok, Tuesdays, 9 a.m. PNG time on ABC Radio Australia, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to...
Join Sase Fo'amoli every Tuesday afternoon for Sister Sounds, a music show dedicated to showcasing the breadth of talented female musicians and performers from across the Pacific on ABC Radio Australia. Sister Sounds will bring you amazing local talent mixed with the sounds and vibe you'll love by artists from across the seas as well. Tune in to Sister Sounds, Tuesday afternoon at 3 PNG time on ABC Radio Australia.
Welcome back to Pacific Beat. I'm your host, Aggie Dubon. We'll be here to Fiji, where a prominent online writer says his treatment by the country's anti-corruption agency has done nothing to reduce the problem of corruption. Charlie Charters was released on bail after appearing in court yesterday afternoon on two counts of aiding and abetting the release of official information without permission. The charges were laid by the Fiji Independent Commission Against Corruption after its officers arrested the former journalist at Nundi Airport on Saturday and then detained him for 48 hours at FICAC's headquarters in Suva. Mr. Charters has said FICAC wanted him to name an internal whistleblower who'd been given him documents he'd posted online that exposed questionable conduct by FICAC's commissioner. Outside court, Mr. Charters questioned the impact FICAC's pursuit of him would have on corruption in Fiji.
I would suggest the problem with corruption in Fiji is just as big, just as significant, perhaps even more so, because an attempt has been made to silence whistleblower and whistleblowers from within FICAC, and the person they've chosen to jump all over is me. That doesn't make Fiji a better or safer place. It doesn't make our country more free, more safe, from the threat of corruption, which is undoing so much of the country's progress and where we want to go from here. These are real live issues, which I don't think are being handled responsibly or sensitively.
And that's Charlie Charters speaking outside court there. Now, when he was arrested on Saturday, the Fiji Media Association was one of several groups and prominent individuals who criticised FICAC's actions. In a statement at the time, the association said it looked like a reenactment of scenes from a dark past we fought hard to be free from. Joining us this morning is the association's General Secretary, Stanley Simpson. With that, I say Yandere Stanley and welcome to Pacific Beat.
Yandere Vinaka.
Thank you very much for joining us this morning, Stanley. I mean, first, why was the association so concerned by FICAC's treatment of Charlie Charters?
Good morning. Yes, the charges are now before the court, so I'm mindful about what I'll say. But indeed, as our statement said on Saturday, it, as you said, looked like a reenactment of scenes from a dark past we fought hard to be free from. The outcry from, you know, not just from the FMA, but from many Fijians, that Charlie was posting and speaking out and being critical about the actions and activities at FICAC. Then suddenly he was detained, arrested, and then charged by FICAC. So for many of us, it brought back some flashbacks of a past when those who spoke out against government, you know, were detained, arrested, charged under the Public Order Act and other laws that were seen as actions deemed to and designed to silence dissent. So our concerns really were about the potential threat to freedom of expression that was posed by the arrest.
And Stanley, what do you actually think of Mr. Charter's observation, you know, that his treatment may deter other whistleblowers from coming forward or even going to the media?
Well, this is why we need legislation and safeguards that protect whistleblowers. FICAC itself has said it wants a whistleblower. It has said it wants a Whistleblower Protection Act. They even told a parliamentary committee recently that people are afraid to come forward because they need confidence that they will be protected. We at the FMA have also called for a whistleblower policy and whistleblower protection. And that should be taken seriously because it goes directly to whether people feel safe to report wrongdoing. I actually think that despite Charlie's arrest, more people will start coming out and coming forward to the media. Yeah, because, I see now from the outrage and the outcry that people don't want their freedoms curtailed. We've been through that before, and now people are demanding greater accountability.
And I suppose, as some observers have pointed out, you know, a year ago, FICAC was calling again, like you said, for that Whistleblower Protection Act. I mean, how does this latest incident sit with those comments, though?
Well, FICAC should actually encourage whistleblowers. It's, you know, it'll help them in their work. This latest incident, it shows that the Whistleblower Protection Act must move quickly, as it is a key part of fighting corruption. It is interesting that FICAC has charged Charlie for aiding and abetting an unknown FICAC officer who blew the whistle. But as I mentioned, this matter is now before the courts and will be decided by the courts.
And I'm sure the association has certain things that they believe should happen from here. What do you think that is?
As I said before, the courts, we respect it. Our call was for clarity, due process, and public confidence in the process. And going forward, we're urging governments and the authorities to move quickly on the Whistleblower Protection Policy or Act. If the country wants credible anti-corruption reporting and investigations.
Stanley, as you know, it's the latest in a string of controversies involving FICAC and its personnel. Do you think it's capable then of doing its job anymore? And I ask that only, like, does the public have faith in it anymore, or should this be something that should be scrapped or even replaced?
Well, you know, that's public debate going on in Fiji. You know, it's been going on for a while since the last elections. And, you know, for many, they just want, we just want FICAC to do its work in fighting corruption. It's worked well in other places. It should work well in Fiji if done properly. But, you know, there's plenty of things happening in the middle there. So if it works independently and with integrity, I think we can move forward with it. I mean, you're right. There have been a string of controversies and allegations of political influence that has been used to target political opponents. This came out during the previous government, and in over the last year after this, the commission of inquiry that saw the appointment and dismissal of Barbara Malimali and the appointment of Lavi Rokoika. Now the Judicial Services Commission has made recommendations to the president that Rokoika, who brought these charges against Charlie, should be removed from FICAC as she was not appointed under the FICAC Act and through the JSC process. So, you know, we need, well, for me, the leadership of FICAC needs to be resolved, and then we have a real proper discussion and debate about how we can move forward.
Well, look, we appreciate your time this morning to come on the show and share about the latest on this incident there in Fiji. So thank you again, Stanley. Vinaka.
Vinaka.
That is Stanley Simpson, General Secretary of the Fiji Media Association, here on Pacific Beat.
Pacific Beat.
Yes, if you've just joined us, thank you. I'm your host, Aggie DuBowl, for Pacific Beat. This is what's been on the show so far. Police in the Solomon Islands deny rumours that they've given permission to Chinese police to open their own station in the capital, Honiara. Indonesian fishing vessels have been caught allegedly fishing illegally in PNG waters. And also Fiji, we would have just heard, despite prominent online writer Charlie Charters being released on bail, he says his treatment by the country's anti-corruption agency has done nothing to reduce the problem of corruption. Still to come, though, we'll be talking about the newly appointed general manager of the PNG Chiefs, who has some big ambitions for the team, as well as here in Australia, a farmer has built a chapel for the seasonal Tongan workers, described as the backbone of their banana operation. All that right here on Pacific Beat, but right now, it's your news wrap. Yes, Vinaka Vakalevu for joining us here on Pacific Beat. It is that time where we head around the region to get the latest headlines. And of course, joining me in the studio, we have our producer. Oh my gosh, I was going to say someone else's name, but I was like, no, it's Jordan.
It's me.
I have had so many producers, I apologise, Jordan. I was about to go, who?
Welcome to Pacific Beat.
Thank you very much for joining me, Jordan. I appreciate it. I know there's a couple of headlines and things that have been happening around the region. This first one, though, really unfortunate. Fijian national has been extradited to Australia to face trial over an alleged rape. What's happening here?
That's right, Aggie. So Fiji Times reporting that a Fijian national, Arvind Ajay Singh, has been extradited from Fiji to Queensland to face court. The 43-year-old is a former childcare worker charged with an alleged rape offence. The alleged offence is said to have occurred at a childcare centre on the Sunshine Coast between February and April 2022. Back then, his visa had been previously cancelled and he was deported to Fiji in July last year. Then an arrest warrant was later issued after he failed to appear in court.
Wow.
The matter has been set down for trial in March this year.
Yes, next month. Okay, well, we'll be keeping our eyes and ears on that story then. I believe Pacific countries are appearing to move closer to deep sea mining through engagement with the United States.
Yeah, so that's right. Today and tomorrow, there's a big meeting being held in Hawaii, which is called the Pacific Agenda Investment Security and Shared Prosperity Summit. Senior officials from the U.S., including the Deputy Secretary of State, Christopher Landau, will be there, along with Mark Brown, Prime Minister of the Cook Islands, and then representatives from Nauru, Tonga and Kiribati are also going to be attending as well. This meeting follows a framework agreement between the US and the Cook Islands on securing critical minerals and rare earths.
Yes.
Now, while economically we don't know yet, but there are a lot of Pacific countries thinking it could be a boon for their economies. Critics, including the Pacific Network on Globalization, have warned that this could bring Pacific nations closer to deep sea mining, saying it's an industry that is untested and also controversial.
Yeah. This is a very ongoing controversial conversation to always have, isn't it? Okay, let's head on to the Cook Islands, though, just to continue with them, though. Some good news there. Dengue fever cases are on a downward trend. Love that.
Yeah, so this has come after Cook Islands Health Ministry activated an operation called Operation Namu 26 in response to the outbreak. That operation, Namu 26, included mosquito spraying, surveillance, and an island-wide cleanup to reduce mosquito populations.
Okay.
Since that operation kicked off in early Feb 6, Rarotonga has recorded 121 positive cases, but that is on a downward trend, a trend of declining. The highest single day was 19 cases on the 9th of Feb, okay. and then zero cases recorded on the 15th of February. So that's great news for Cook Islands.
Absolutely. Look, as always, Jordan, thank you very much for bringing us our headlines from across the region. And if you've just tuned in, that is our news wrap here on Pacific Beat.
You're listening to Pacific Beat on ABC Radio Australia.
Yes, well, now in Australia, a far north Queensland farming family says it could not have developed its million carton a year banana business without its long-term Tongan workforce. Peter and Francis Inderbitson started hiring workers from Tonga 15 years ago, and some of the original workers are still on staff. Francis saved for a decade to build a Swiss-inspired chapel for Sunday worship, and it opened last year. Landline's Pip Courtney went along.
Ancient volcanoes created the fertile soil of Lakeland on the Cape York Peninsula. Bananas, melons, avocados and cattle thrive in the rich earth. It's home to 300 people, including three generations of the Inderbitson family. 40 years ago, Peter Inderbitson convinced his Swiss bride, Frances, the red dirt was worth leaving their dairy farm near Cairns.
When you look back, was it a gutsy move for your mum and dad to come to Lakeland?
Without a doubt, yeah. Yep, there was obviously nothing here when they came. They're both visionaries, for sure.
It took 20 years for a tiny banana trial to reveal their ideal crop. They now produce a million cartons of bananas a year from 300 hectares on two farms. The Inderbitsons' multiple businesses would not exist without their 130 Tongan staff. They've worked the bananas for 15 years.
They bring a lot of joy and happiness to our farms, and we are very grateful that we can help them also in return.
Now the first generation's children are joining the workforce.
Quite amazing. We've got the fathers here and their daughters and some of their sons as well. Which is really wonderful.
Are they workers or almost family?
I regard them as my family, my extended children, really.
Francis saved and planned for 10 years to build a chapel for the Tongans.
A large part of the culture is religion, and they would have their weekly services in our banana packing shed, and eventually moved to the town hall. And I just felt there was no spiritual atmosphere there, and I was just hoping that we could build a little chapel eventually.
The Swiss-inspired chapel opened last year and is used every Sunday.
Oh, Frances is like an angel for me. And she also like a mother to us. She treats us like her own children. And it's so nice to have her here.
They can pray for their families. You know, they pray for the farm every week. They pray for all of us. So it's a real blessing, I think, for the farm and for the whole community.
It's really uplifting us. So we have a proper chapel to worship every Sunday. And I'm grateful for her and her family and to make the her dream come true.
And that there was Stuart Daldua, who has worked for the Inderbitson family for 15 years, talking to Landline's Pitt Courtney. And to see the stunning chapel, head online to ABC News to find the full story. Now, Vanuatu's anti-corruption watchdog says the country is still waiting for the government to inform the public about the grounding of the patrol boat RVS Takuare. The vessel, which was gifted from Australia, ran aground 4 months ago near South Epi during a government tour. Dr. Willie Token, CEO of Transparency International Vanuatu, told Pacific Beat's Leah Loanbu the government needs to be held accountable about the incident.
The letters I have is the Commissioner of Police appointed one Commission of Inquiry, but then it came back that maybe he doesn't have the power to do that. I think it was the minister of one of the ministers was supposed to appoint the commission of inquiry. It was supposed to be done again. It's been taken a while. We haven't had any appointments. We haven't had any report coming out. Again, that smells of has very bad smell because we need to know why this the RVS Takore was on that run, especially when we had about 20 or 40 illegal fishing boats were fishing in our waters at that particular time. And the allegation is that RVS Takore was being used to transport some leaders around the islands. So again, if they want, if they don't want, if the people concerned do not want transparency, then maybe that is the reason why we haven't heard anything more.
So do you think it's important that the government goes ahead and does that investigation?
Again, the leaders now are trying to hide something, or they're trying to hide somebody, which is wrong, because the boat is not supposed, it's not for transporting leaders around or anybody else. The function of the boat was to protect our waters from illegal fishing or illegal activities. We don't understand why this boat was transporting some of our leaders around, if the allegations are true, when it was supposed to be protecting our waters. So again, it's the same as the sale of passport. It seems that our leaders are trying to hide somebody or slow things down so that public don't know what they're doing.
So how does the lack of an investigation into last year's shipwreck impact Vanuatu's international reputation, particularly given that the vessel was a gift from a key strategic partner like Australia?
In transparency, we have something called Corruption Perception Index. You score out of 100, depending on 100 is a clean country with no corruption or almost no corruption, and one is a very corrupt country. In Vanuatu, in 2024, our score was 50. 2025, our score went down to 47. So even me, I was very surprised and I was very worried that we dropped 3 points in 1 year. That's very unusual. Normally, countries will drop 1 point, at the most 2 points, but 3 points. So I followed it up. And this is the perception of our donors and our partners. I've been around transparency for over 10 years. This is the first big drop that I've seen. And when I ask why some of our partners and donors score us this way, the answer was very simple. Two things. One, the sale of our passport. You know, we're selling some of our passports to some people who have never been to Vanuatu. Some of them are wanted by Interpol. Number two, in Vanuatu, we have set up right to information office, ombudsman, public prosecutor, financial intelligence unit, and the auditor general. But these offices are very under-resourced in terms of budget, in terms of human resource. So literally, they're not very effective. So for me, it's embarrassing because it seems like our leaders have no respect for integrity, transparency, accountability.
And that there is CEO of Transparency International Vanuatu, Dr. Willie Token, speaking with reporter Leah Loanbu.
Join Jacob McQuire and Michael Chow for Nisha Daily every weekday morning on ABC Radio Australia.
DJ Noise. Am I doing that right?
Can I hear your best? Another one.
Another one.
Give us a DJ Khaled.
All right.
DJ Khaled.
We're the best music. Another one.
Anyway, Nisha Daily, yes. Weekday mornings from 7 o'clock PNG time on ABC Radio Australia.
Want to catch up or listen again to your favourite ABC Radio Australia programs anytime, anywhere? From Pacific Beat to Stories from the Pacific, Nisian Footy to Culture Compass. You can listen to your top shows on your favourite podcast app on the go and for free. Just search for your favourite ABC Radio Australia program in your podcast app and press play. ABC Radio Australia. bringing you more ways to listen.
Welcome back to Pacific Beat. Now, the newly appointed general manager of the PNG Chiefs NRL franchise, Michael Chamas, is nothing if not ambitious. He's already declared his intention to build a side that will be strong enough to press for finals in its first season in 2028. And that process will start with the appointment of a head coach. Chamas would like to have that coach in place by May and begin player recruitment as soon as possible after that. For the man himself, after many years as a leading rugby league journalist, taking on an administrative role with the Chiefs is a massive change, but he's relishing the challenge.
The thing about me is I got into journalism because of my love for rugby league. I wanted to play rugby league. I did for 20 years, but not at a level that was ever good enough to make it in the NRL. So for me, it was how do I stay involved in rugby league if I'm not good enough to play it? And the avenue for me at the time was journalism. But that love for rugby league hasn't gone away. And sort of having the chance over the last 2 years to sort of embed myself with some of the NRL teams, I spent some time with the Roosters in Las Vegas, in the Inner Sanctum, did some stuff with the Raiders and Sharks as well. And it just gave me this perspective of wanting to be part of it rather than write about it. And when the opportunity came up, I couldn't say no. I want to be part of building this club and giving the people of PNG something to be proud of and helping Prime Minister James Marape's dream turn into life.
So how do you see the task ahead? Already there's been talk about who the head coach might be. The suggestion is that Jason Demetriou as Cumwell's head coach is interested, that Adrian Lam, former PNG Cumwell star, of course, doing great things with Lee in England, also interested. I'm guessing they're not the only two.
No, of course not. It's great that we have some coaches who want to coach the Chiefs in 28. I don't think we're going to have any shortage of coaches that want to do it. It's working out with the ARL Commission and going through that process with them as to determine who will be best suited, because it's not just a normal NRL head coaching job. The reality is there's so many other elements to it. There's a cultural element. There's also the fact that we're all going to be living together in the player village. So we've got to find the best coach who ticks all the boxes, and it's not just about football with this. And to do that, we're going to have to speak to a number. So I'm mindful of the fact that I don't want to wait 6 or 7 months to have a coach. We want to do this as soon as we can.
In terms of player recruitment, though, am I right that officially you can't start that process until the upcoming season is over?
We're still getting clarity on that from the NRL. So anyone who's off contract at the end of 2027, we can't talk to them until November 1. Well, what if you're off contract in 2026? Technically, you're a free agent now. So if we can sign you for 2028 and then you do a short-term deal with someone else in the interim, what's stopping us from signing a player who's off contract right now? So we're seeking clarity on that from the NRL, whether or not we'd be able to do that. If we are, well, we'll be in the market as soon as we get the green light.
And what about the balance of the side in terms of players that you would bring in from existing clubs in the NRL as against to those you would recruit from within PNG, presumably from the Digicel Cup or the Hunters, of course?
Yeah, look, there's no doubt our objective is to have a strong PNG flavour. We want that throughout our team, and we know that what we start with is going to be completely different to where we are in 10 years' time. Now, I know that the work's being done in the Pacifics right now with Joey Grimer, head of the Pathways over there. There's some tremendous kids coming through the PNG system. Are they NRL ready right now? Maybe not, but by 2028, they might be. And by 2035, there'll be a strong contingent of those kids who are developing through these systems who will be in our team. We do need a strong element of current NRL players that we need to recruit. But the emphasis, though, is making sure we're not relying on that for the next decade. The right player that we need, we don't want players that are just coming for a paycheck. We're not naive that the tax incentives will be a lure to a lot of players. But if you're coming here just to cash in, then you're not the player that we need. We need guys who are going to embrace living in Papua New Guinea. They're going to embrace the challenge of helping raise the nation. They were going to be pioneers in inspiring the next generation. They're the kind of players who are passionate about those sort of things that we want. If it's just money they're coming for, then we'll work that out pretty quickly. And they are the players that we're going to recruit.
I think it's worth clarifying in terms of the financing of the Chiefs and the money that's coming in from the deal that was signed between the two governments, Australia and Papua New Guinea. This figure of $600 million is bandied around left, right and centre. But my understanding is around $250 million will come to the club over 10 years. So $25 million per year over 10 years. The rest of that money goes elsewhere. It doesn't come into the PNG Chiefs. That's my understanding. Has that changed?
Yeah, look, I'm not quite aware of the exact breakdown of what the governments have agreed upon, but you're right. There's a large chunk that's being designated to other areas like the Pathways programs, not just in PNG, throughout the Pacific. You know, we've got a heavy contingent of Tongan and Samoan and Fijian players in the NRL. So the big focus is money towards growing the game in the Pacific, not just in PNG. The other elements of that is infrastructure that needs to go in, the PNG government. There's a centre of excellence being built. There are things around the accommodation that we need to take care of. There are costs associated with this this club that no other club will have to consider. So while on the surface, the $600 million sounds like a lot, turn this into reality, it requires a lot of funding and a lot of investment in key areas, and that's not just the football program. So, yeah, I don't know the exact breakdown, but there is a large, large percentage going towards other things.
Going back to the question of recruitment, so you're keen, you say, to get the head coach in as soon as possible. So how soon do you think that might be, bearing in mind we know at least two people who are very keen?
I'd like to hope in the next 2 months we'd have a coach. You know, I know that the Dolphins and the Perth Bears, they probably were a bit later on when they appointed their coach. And we want to be ahead of the curve. We want to make sure that we have the ability to go into the market. Like, I'm reluctant to enter the marketplace without a coach. You want to give the coach the best chance to recruit the kind of players that he wants. I'm doing my homework on the type of people we want. That's my job right now, is to work out what players fit the culture we want to build. But the coach is going to have the same type of player he wants. So the sooner we get him in, the sooner we can start recruiting.
And that's Michael Chalmers, PNG Chiefs' newly appointed general manager, clearly with some big plans in mind. And he was talking to Richard Hewitt. Time to take a look back at one of our main stories today. In Fiji, despite prominent online writer Charlie Charters being released on bail, Fiji's Media Association says the arrest of a prominent writer, like a reenactment of scenes from a dark past we fought hard to be free from.
We at the FMA have also called for a whistleblower policy and whistleblower protection. That should be taken seriously because it goes directly to whether people feel safe to report wrongdoing.
Now, you can find that story and others when you type Pacific Beat or Radio Australia into your search engine. Remember, our team will be back at the same time tomorrow at 6 a.m. PNG time. But yes, you can always hear us again this afternoon at 5 p.m. PNG time. Now, stay tuned to ABC Radio Australia, though, because your news is next. And coming up after that, it is Nisha Daily. So until next time, I'm your host, Aggie the Bowl, and this is Pacific Beat, yours in the Pacific.